Modern Casserole is a podcast of three hungry women. We met working at a food magazine, and each week we talk about food, culture, what we cooked, and what we ate in San Diego and beyond. I'm Olivia, and this is Modern Casserole. Welcome back. This is actually episode 5, and just wanted to jump back in with you guys. We were just catching up and Felicia started talking about pizza and I was like, we have to press record because I want to hear the pizza updates.
Yes, as if we haven't talked enough about pizza. I decided to try a different type of pizza last weekend. I wanted to do the focaccia bread pizza. And I was really excited. I was ready to go. I had done all this research on how to get like the nice crispy bottom. And it sounds like the key is actually putting a bunch of olive oil in the bottom of your pan, more than you think you need, because during baking, the dough will absorb it and then crisp up. So it's essentially like oven frying your dough.
Oh, yeah.
Which I was like, this sounds marvelous. I'm going to, you know, set aside the pizza stone and do it a different way. So I had all these great plans, all these great intentions. I bought nice tomatoes and really good mozzarella and all these things. Then I can't find yeast. So I looked at one store, no yeast, another store, no yeast. And I remembered you guys talking about, oh, Trader Joe's has yeast. I was like, excellent. And if they don't have it, there's always Trader Joe's dough. I pull up there. It's like the one holiday per year they're not open. Closed. I was beside myself. I was, because I had this Goulia. I needed it. So Methy tried to calm me down. Was like, fine, let's just go to any market and we'll find something. And I got there. And of course, there was no frozen crust or any kind of other doughs. So I ended up in the refrigerated section next to like the Pillsbury biscuits. And they actually have pizza dough in a can. In those little, like, you know, the cans you whack on the side of the counter. And
ones that when you, like, peel them open, they scare you every time, even though you know it's going to pop.
Okay. Exactly.
Yeah.
They make a pizza dough in that. And I was like, you know, this is going to be horrible, but I'm going to get it anyways. I get home just in this terrible mood. And I'm like Googling, how do I make this not terrible? And one of Pillsbury's hacks, actually, is to roll out your dough and then take melted butter and minced garlic, and I added hot chili flakes, and brush your dough with that and before adding all your other toppings. And it'll kind of almost make it like a garlic bread, and then you add your topping.
Do you par cook it? Like, do you cook it first and then put all the toppings? Or
that's what they had suggested.
Yeah.
But I decided to go my own way. I did kind of a combination of things. So I put a bunch of oil on my pan and rolled out this already oily dough. And I rolled fresh mozzarella in the edges for kind of like a cheesy crust.
Like a stuffed crust?
Yes. And then I brushed it with this melted butter and garlic and red chili flakes. And then I added just a really simple fresh tomato sauce and some slices of fresh mozzarella, some Parmesan, tons more garlic because I'm a garlic fanatic. I didn't par cook it or anything. I threw that joker in there. I baked it and it was so freaking good. Let me tell you.
Because you stuffed the crust.
I mean, that did not hurt at all. And the bottom got pretty, like, fried and delicious.
Crispy. Like an old, old school, like, pan style pizza.
And the dough itself is a little bit sweet, which could be off-putting, but I was like, no, you know what? It's okay. So I think I might actually do that again this weekend, but I'm going to add pineapple and hot chili oil to it.
Yeah.
See what happens.
Dramatic. Yum.
That sounds so good.
Yeah, that's my plan.
Yum.
That sounds so good.
You know, you can grill pizzas. My sister just recently did one on her smoker, and she said it was ungodly good. Like she won't go back to cooking it the old way.
Oh, on the smoker.
Does she put the dough right on the grate?
No, on a pizza stone. You warm your pizza stone in the smoker and you do it in there. And I've been asking around too, because, you know, we have these different gluten-free bakeries. One of them just released flatbreads as an option. And she's like, oh yeah, you can do that in there too. But apparently smoking your pizza is going to be the next new thing.
Wow.
Sounds good to me. If only I had room for a smoker.
I know, right?
Oh my gosh. What does she like to put on her pizzas?
She did hers. I think she did like a margarita. She's pretty classic. My sister is an amazing cook. But she's a lot like you, Felicia, in the sense that she's like a project cook. She's going to research all the recipes for baby back ribs and, you know, figure out why this one is so good and what makes it the best and, you know, try all these different techniques to make it even better. She's very
accurate. We're going to have her come on to the show as a guest someday.
Yes, definitely.
Yes, pick her brain about that.
Oh, speaking of projects, I want you girls to give me a reality check. Because I think I might be about to get in over my head.
Okay.
It is Methy's birthday is coming up, and I am not a baker. My mom is not a baker. And yet, for some reason, we think it's a good idea to try to make our own choux pastry and make, you know, cream puffs. And then I was like, oh, as a backup plan, I'm going to make a homemade fruit tart. So.
Okay.
I don't know, though, because, like, I am not, I'm so not a baker, and we both feel so overly confident about this. My mom's not a baker either. She doesn't even like following directions, so am I about to burn down my kitchen and or ruin his birthday?
I don't think you're going to burn down your kitchen. You might not end up with something that is perfect or Pinterest-worthy, but maybe it still tastes good. That's always been kind of my cooking, or not cooking, I should say baking or pastry type experiences, is that, you know, it's a nailed it episode, but it still tastes good. So
I think the choux, like, that's actually one of those really interesting, like, pastry options that I think are pretty foolproof, or I don't know, they always make it seem that way on the shows, but then something
The Great British Baking Show has made me overly confident about things I know.
There you go. That's what it is. I think that's where my statement just came from. I realized as I said it, I was like, okay, but those are people that are actually baking all the time. And
have you made, they always mess it up. Have you made choux?
No.
I've made it. I made it with someone, and they made it all the time. Like, they could make it without looking at a recipe. They just know it by heart. And so it turned out perfect, of course, because I was helping someone else, but I've never tried it independently.
I love puff pastry. Oh, I'm not puff pastry. I mean, cream puffs.
Yeah.
Yes, puff pastry, also, yes, cream puffs. That's why the choux is always so, like, oh, it's almost like I feel like if I knew how to make it, it would be like game over, and like I would become a cream puff. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I feel like that's why I haven't. It's like, if it's too dangerous to have that knowledge in my brain and my hands. So I think that's why I've resisted. But I kind of want to encourage you to do it, just because I want to, like, hear all about it.
Well, and one of our Persian friends in Oman, we went over to her house and she had made this huge basket of these Persian cream puffs. And I was like, oh, wow, that looks so hard. She was like, it's so easy. You wouldn't believe.
Oh, right.
But then she's also, you know, Persian. So she's probably saying it's easy. She'd probably say it was easy if she spent like 15 hours on it. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, oh, man, I may be setting myself up for disaster. But
I'm sure it's still going to taste good. It just might not be pretty.
Yeah. I'm sure it's going to be pretty, too. I'm sure we're going to just believe it's going to be just
It's going to be gorgeous. It's going to be wonderful. Everything's going to be great.
Well, have you guys made tarts before? Because then I was like, ooh, I can at least arrange beautiful fruit on some on some whipped cream.
I have done tarts.
Yeah.
I've done some fun kind of. I've even done my own, like, versions. I've done, like graham cracker ones where you, like, you know, kind of push it down into the tart pan, and, you know, as long as you've got like a binder in there and like let it set, you know, I've had really good success. You know, again, I just kind of Google around and read a bunch of recipes and concoct my own, you know, aggregator recipe.
Because you can be flexible with something like that. Yeah. And I think, you know, as long as you can master a pie crust too, you could probably do more of a traditional tart, isn't it? What did they call it? Like a short crust?
It's yeah, a, which I was like, crust. Maybe like a shortbread cookie crust would be yes. delicious.
Mm, that which would be, that's kind of that idea short, where you kind of mash it up.
Well, yeah. That's it. Talking to you guys now, I'm like, maybe I should skip all this dough nonsense and just crush up some shortbread cookies. And mm-hmm. what do you think? Shortbread cookies, some butter, and just press them in the pan?
Yes.
Would that mm-hmm. be all I'd need? Do I need yep. an egg yeah. or anything?
Mm-mm. No,
I don't think you even need an egg. You can do some searching a little bit just to get like an idea of what a typical one would be.
The ratio, because it's like the crumb yes. to butter ratio has to be. I think I don't remember what it is off the top of my head, yeah. but you can't. I've used whatever your ratio is for a graham cracker crust. I have used with other cookies, and it turned out lovely.
Mm-hmm.
Exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. And then you can have fun with the toppings, like you said. Like, obviously, you do the filling, and then you get to, like, use all the beautiful stone fruit that are in season right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
Oh, I should have you guys come over to help me with that. You are the master arrangers of fruit boards and veggie platters and all sorts of beautiful things.
Yes.
You're making me blush.
Yeah, seriously. It comes from just prepping everything, like cutting them up beautifully so that you have like that array to work with. Even then, sometimes I'm like, Maria, please come in here and help me because...
And I'm asking you for help yeah. too. So we just work good together. It's
teamwork makes the dream work. Oh, you know, that's what they say. But, wow. What are you going to pair? Like, what's the meal going to be with this beautiful pastry for dessert?
Oh, do you have any? Super simple. I'm going to do like a cheese board. And some pasta. I have this like kind of go-to pasta recipe that he loves. That it's like chickpeas and a mirepoix and a bunch of Parmesan cheese, and the broth cooks down into a sauce, like a white sauce. Yeah,
sounds
that was
great.
A terrible description, actually.
No, it sounds really nice.
But I love it because it's one pot. You throw everything. You throw your noodles, maybe some chicken stock if you want to. After you've sautéed the mirepoix, and you just let it hang out and reduce and get nice. The chickpeas kind of thicken it. And
the starch from the pasta, probably, since you're cooking it all together.
Do you have any liquid? Any other liquids? Or just the
Water or chicken broth, just enough to cover the noodles and the vegetables. And as it thickens, add a ton of black pepper and grated Parmesan. And it's pretty great.
You had me at Parmesan.
Yeah. You had me at one pot. Yeah. You know, I love that idea that you just... put it all. I've done that as well. That tried those pasta recipes where you put everything in together, and it is a really kind of fun way, make it easy, like weeknight thing or something special. It sounds like that you've created.
Can you crock
pot? My whole family is going to be here for his birthday, so it's like it also has to be somewhat easy.
Yeah,
because yes. I'm going to be spending all day on the damn tart and cream puffs. So it's like something festive, but. Easy, but I'll put the recipe on the website.
Yeah.
Oh, great. Yeah.
It's a good weeknight.
Can you crock pot it?
You know, I'm not a crock potter. I would love for you to talk to me about that because I have an Instant Pot and I have used it only to make chickpeas in a pinch. I've never used it for anything else. Like, I feel afraid of the crock pot. Like, it's not gonna do what long cooking does. So tell me what you do with
exactly
yours.
What long. I mean, I use my crock pot once a week for tacos. Because I just throw the whatever meat or filling it might be in the crock pot with some taco seasoning for a few hours and then heat up my tortillas and we have tacos.
Liquid? Tell me more.
No liquid. If it's a meat, like let's say it's ground beef, most of the time, the fat's going to reduce out as it does, but then it absorbs back in, which I know some people don't prefer, but I kind of like it.
I'm into it.
It's always like the good key to it, like an Italian meat sauce. I don't know if you guys have ever seen it done like this, but they'll brown the meat, drain the fat, and then refry it with the fat again and do it in the sauce. So it's like, I don't know, folded in. So anyways, if you do that with chicken thighs, like boneless, skinless chicken thighs, I just throw them in the crock pot, cover them with some taco seasoning, and then I shred them apart and they're good to go. Sliced mushrooms I've done in there, but I use it for, I've used it for a lot of other things. I've never used an Instant Pot, but they're so convenient. The only challenge with it is the storage when you have a small kitchen, because it's not something that you can leave out on your cabinet or counter, sorry, and it doesn't necessarily fit in the cabinets. But it's a worthy buy, and they're generally under $30 for a small one. You just turn it on.
Well, going back to your tacos, I remember you saying something about garam masala lamb tacos. Am I hallucinating, or is that real?
No, well, I was sharing with you guys there, because I normally make my own taco seasoning, but I've been out of cumin. So I was like, well, what do I have that does have cumin, right? Because it's really hard when you run out of cumin. I don't, especially yeah. if, you, mm-hmm. if you've gotten used to it. There's such a punch that it adds to everything, like this. I don't know, in certain cuisines.
It's very distinctive
it is.
Spice, I find. Yeah.
And you see it in a lot of different cuisines. So I ran out of cumin and I subbed in garam masala with the lamb. So I used ground lamb. It was ground grass-fed lamb, and it was delicious. It was really delicious because it just cut through all the gaminess of the lamb. And I got way more of the, like, the garlic and the onion and the smoked paprika and those elements. And then I tried the same thing with chicken. So there was just a little bit more of, I guess, for lack of better term, maybe a curry flavor to it, but it was still really good. So we had kind of like curry-ish chicken tacos one week, and the week before that, there's lamb tacos. But I just wanted to share it was an interesting substitute, not disappointing whatsoever at all. Because you get the floral notes of, like, I think garam masala sometimes have cardamom in it. And anyways, they all
work
together.
Did you do anything else, or just the garam masala?
No, I use smoked paprika, garlic granules, onion granules, coriander, some garam masala. Basically, you know, just a mishmash of whatever spices are in the spice cabinet. Salt, pepper. I don't know. Nice. I don't ever measure anything, because I'm just gonna eyeball it, right?
Yeah, dash of this, dash of that.
But it's good. It was really good.
Now I want pizza and tacos this weekend.
We have tacos every Tuesday, and I love it because I don't have to think about dinner. Like,
you know what's on the menu.
And what's nice is if you get, like, a couple packs of ground beef for us, we're a household of two. That's three taco nights. So I, you know, I'll cook off a couple pounds at a time and then freeze some of it in like a weekly batch. So I have it backed up and just pull it out of the freezer, and we got tacos.
That's great. Well, Felicia, if you thought you were hungry, now I'm going to throw in another random thing, because I don't have any crock pot things. So my kind of go-to thing, it's kind of like even a weeknight quick thing for me, is actually grilling. And I know for some people that would not seem like a quick thing, but the way that I kind of approach it, it's pretty, like, fast and easy. So we have a grill in our building. We live downtown, but we have, like, this courtyard with a couple, like, communal grills. So it's nice. We don't have to, like, deal with any of the maintenance, but we get all this, you know, this opportunity to grill year round really easily. So my go-to is, like, to literally grab, like, a baking tray, like a huge baking sheet, actually. And I just, whatever I have on hand, like, you know, vegetable wise, protein wise, it just kind of goes on the tray. Like, I'll have, like, a pile of onions, a pile of even, like, leeks that I basically, I cut them, like, lengthwise, and, you know, wash them out, make sure there's no grit. And I know, Maria, when we talk about leeks, we always, like, laugh about this, because we've seen people not, you know, even in professional settings with leeks, they won't cut them lengthwise and wash them out.
They don't
and then
know
you
how
get
to
that.
Clean them.
Yeah, you get the grit.
Oh, it pisses me off.
That's every nasty. Time. Wow. I think about it every time I'm cleaning out leeks. And what's funny is, like, I'll be cleaning each of them and there's no grit inside. Of course, the last one that I end up cleaning has all the grit. So I'm always, like, very relieved that, again, good thing I did this method. Anyways, that's a little PSA for everybody, to make sure you clean leeks. And you just do that by cutting them lengthwise and running them under water and kind of fanning open those different layers of the leak and just getting all that out there. So anyways, that goes on the tray, you know, piles of asparagus, kind of some more typical things like that. I also really like to grill, you know, just cremini mushrooms or whatever mushrooms I have on hand. What else goes on there? Green onion.
Do you skewer
them? I don't skewer anything. Because also then I just don't mess with that. I just throw it all right onto the grate once it's really, really hot. And everything's tossed in olive oil and a bit of salt, a bit of sea salt ahead of time. So I find that helps with, you know, things not sticking. And even for my protein, I keep it really simple. Like I'm really a big fan of also having those, the boneless, skinless chicken thighs on hand for grilling. Because I like the dark meat and I find that it just doesn't dry out on the grill. So it's really, really a like foolproof option.
Because all the schmaltz like melts back in.
Makes yeah, it there is tender. A bit of more fat on that piece. So I basically, with that same, just kind of douse it in some olive oil. And I usually use like a dry rub that just gets mixed in with the olive oil and coats everything and hangs out while I'm, you know, prepping everything else out. So I'm not doing like any long, you know, marinade or anything like that. And then everything goes on the grill and comes off. And actually, one of the things that also goes on there is the lemon. I actually like to cut lemon, whole lemon, just in half, and then I grill it up so it gets really juicy. Like it's really, really like jammy inside, and it just gets this beautiful kind of floral flavor from charring. And that gets drizzled over everything at the end. So there's a ton of onions there too, and that those get really sweet. So you've got like that sweet char. You've got I throw some jalapenos on there, so we got some spice. I kind of try to like balance everything out in that way, and with different textures and colors and things like that. So
seems like a great way to clean out the fridge at the end of the week.
Yes, it is. It really is. And I mean, I shop that way thinking, okay, what's really great to grill and, you know, of course, use for everything else. But it is a really great way to kind of use everything up at the end of the week or in the middle of the week is cool, too. But serving it is also fun. Like I usually like have toum, which is the garlic paste. You know, it's like a Lebanese or Middle Eastern garlic paste. Which is amazing. I even use that. I mean, I love to have that on hand. I put on sandwiches. It's like, it's like an, I think of it as like an actual, like desirable aioli because it's not mayonnaise-y. It's like just garlic, which is the thing that like I crave from an aioli. So, that goes on everything. And then the schug that we spoke about last week, the, you know, very herbaceous hot sauce. And then I usually have tahini, which is the sesame paste with like lemon and garlic and water. And then actually this kind of relates to what you guys are talking about before. I did some baking recently and I made pita.
I had made pita.
Yeah. I can't believe I forgot about this earlier when you guys were talking about baking. But yeah, I used to make pita a couple years ago when I was living in Israel. I used to teach culinary workshops. And for the most part, I was doing like 6 or 7 different dishes and they were pretty, you know, easy. They're more like salads and kind of shakshuka and things you assemble. But there were a few groups that like kind of requested making pita. And I was like, oh, my gosh, I have to learn how to make pita now. So that I got really into it a few years ago and was like just enamored with the whole process. But it's been a while. So I finally got back into it and made it this weekend. Thinking, okay, we're going to be grilling. It'd be so wonderful to be, put all that great veg and like all the chicken, everything into the pita. And that's how we eat. And that's how we grill in Israel. So, and across the Middle East, of course. So, so I had a really fun time getting the flour back out, which I headed to Trader Joe's, and picked some up ahead of the 4th, July, which was good. And, I had the yeast on hand. So it's a really simple dough recipe, just yeast and flour, a bit of olive oil, salt.
So you do need yeast for pita.
You do need yeast for pita. Yes, it is a yeasted dough. And I found, I'm still working on the recipe, but I can definitely link to, you know, what I'm using currently, you know, for this iteration of it. But the key I found is that you really do have to have a rolling pin, which I didn't have this time around. I used like a jar. So you can just imagine me in my kitchen using, you know, a jar, rolling it out, but you don't get that same precision. And the key with pita is to get the discs really thin so that when the heat hits them, they aren't heavy, like too thick or too heavy to balloon up. So in this instance, they almost looked a little bit more like giant, giant English muffins is the way I would describe them because of just the shape, because I didn't get them as thin, but I was able to like still open them up and make it into a pocket. And it was amazing. Like I was like really kind of sad. I was like, they don't look like pita, thinking like that's what matters, but they tasted like pita. They filled up like a pita. They were incredible. So
do you cook them on the stove or in the oven?
I've done both. I used to do it in the oven, but because as I've said before, my oven gets really, really like smoky, which actually on that note, my brother was listening to our episode about the smoky oven. And he gave me a really great tip about putting a kitchen towel in, like kind of closing it in the door of your microwave to create almost like this wall in front of your stovetop, because the back of the oven is where the like smoke from the oven kind of comes out. If you turn your exhaust fan on with that towel draped down, you kind of are like forcing that smoke to get sucked up by the exhaust instead of going out into like your kitchen and then finding your smoke detector. So I was like, great tip, Josh. So Josh, if you're listening, thank you for that. I did try it recently and it was great. The alarm didn't go off. So it's been tested and working for me. But this method I did was stovetop. I have a friend named Zoe up in LA that's making pita, like phenomenal, just literally mind-blowing pita. And she does this method where she's doing it on a cast iron or like on a flat top, really high temperature. And she flips it on there once it starts to balloon, once it starts to puff. Mm-hmm. And so I did that method and I'm really happy with that method. Again, from my experience, I just know the next round I have to have that rolling pin and getting it super thin so that way it can actually puff up.
What makes it balloon like that?
The steam. So you have, this dough, it's a very yeasty dough, I found, and there's a ton of air pockets that are forming. And when the heat hits it, it's creating a bunch of steam in all those pockets inside. And that basically pushes, the dough to pull apart from each other. So it's just like it's stretching, and creating a big pocket of air in the center. So that's why I'm saying, like, if it's not thin enough, then it has too far to have to, or too strong of a bond to break to pull apart and fill with air. So that's what creates that pocket. But again, this batch that I made, they were thick enough that I was able to actually, once they cooled down, pull it apart with my hands, and it filled beautifully. It was very elastic. It didn't crack and crumble. It was a very, like, I describe it as like a durable pita. Like, you don't have to be gentle with it. Like, it's great. Because then you can really put as much as you want in there.
I love that. If I ever find yeast again, I will try it.
Yes. Yeah. I'll definitely be linking some more information in the show notes for you guys.
Wonderful. Yeah. I wanted to ask real quick about pita. What are the qualities that we look for in a pita versus what we've probably been exposed to from a grocery store brand?
Yeah. I mean, for me, I don't usually buy pita at the market unless I'm like at a Middle Eastern. If I'm at a Middle Eastern grocery, then that's where I'm going to find a pita. I mean, even then, it's still different than the pita that I'm used to from Israel because they have their own version. Like every cuisine, kind of develops things that work for them. But yeah, the ones at at a grocery store are usually kind of that really thin, cracky texture.
Cardboardy.
Yeah, I just can't do it personally.
It's like sawdust.
Yeah, especially because I've experienced the other version, this kind of chewy, a lot more elastic, fluffy pita. So for me, I just kind of bypass it completely unless I'm at the Middle Eastern grocery, or now I'm going to just start making it, I think, every once in a while and probably, make a bigger batch and freeze some to have on hand. As a go-to.
Really?
Yeah.
Nice.
What about you, Felicia? I know obviously you spend a lot of time in the Middle East and have probably a lot of pita experience.
Same. I absolutely won't buy it in like a regular grocery store because it's not even pita. It's like some weird bready, round thing.
But at the Middle Eastern market I go to, they have bags of pita, which are very much like the same bagged pita we got in Oman and elsewhere. And even that, it's like, okay, it's what Methi calls normal bread. Mm. That's what he grew up with. But I don't care for it. I use it. I usually cut it up and toss it with olive oil when I make and crisp it for fattoush salad. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, yeah, I feel like if I was able to make it myself, that would be the only way it would really be worth it. Because even in the Middle East, the stuff you got at the grocery store was kind of bad. But there were these little, yeah, because it's like mm-hmm. it has to stay good for a while. And yeah. It was the little corner markets where you could buy fresh bread every yeah. day, which is what people do. You mm-hmm. you buy it the same day you're going to eat it. And then it's delicious. It's like a totally different product. And
did you ever, would you find it like in the bag? Was it kind of steamy? Like I'd always see them almost looking wet. Because yeah. they put them in there hot. And I used to always mm-hmm. think that's like not good. But actually from this experiment at home, I realized when I put them in a Ziploc for later, when I came back to them, it had that same kind of quality. It looked like there was still steam that yeah. was being released. And actually they were even better once they sat and relaxed in like being enclosed like that. You could do that under a kitchen towel or something as well. But that's, I think that extra steam, it kind of, I was well, kind of joking. It's moisturized.
It's
hydrating. So.
But then if you let it go too long, it gets moldy super fast.
Yes. Mm-hmm. No, this was the same day. This was something you're eating, you know, like you said, if you pick it up fresh, you're going to eat it that same day. And if not, in my house, we freeze them because you don't yeah. want that to go to waste.
Well, and, you know, the freezing is something that I started doing here when we discovered the Persian bakery that makes the fresh sangak and barberry, because like any other bread, if you don't eat it even within a few hours, it gets stale yeah. or it starts molding. It's just not the same. And shockingly, cutting it up and freezing it has worked wonders. It's like we have fresh bread on demand. We just pop it into a toaster, not to toast it, but just to mm-hmm. like, it almost rebakes it. And mm-hmm. it's comes out super chewy with like that nice crisp crust and yeah. If I was making pita like you, I'd definitely freeze them as well. How do you like to reheat them though?
I actually, in this case, because we were grilling, I threw it right on the grill and that was great because then you get that direct heat to it. Mm-hmm. So it kind of doing the same thing I did on the stove where it's kind of building up the steam inside and kind of livening it, I guess. I don't know. Bringing reviving. It back to life.
It's revitalized.
Reviving. There you go. It's being revived. Well, and that was great because it all, again, like I said, it kind of brings like a little crispiness to it and like chewiness. And even with that, after I reheated it, I put it in like a towel so that steam, again, would continue to kind of like, you know, hydrate it. And it was, I'm telling you guys, like, oh, I don't usually rave about my
warmer.
Own food.
Tortilla.
Oh, that's a great idea. Yes, that's
I have
a great
one.
Idea.
I've never used it for tortilla, but it works great for flatbread.
And if you have stale bread products, I don't know if you guys know this, but you can spray it like spray bottle water, just lightly coat it, pop it in the oven for a few minutes at 350, and it like it.
So it's the moisture. When things go stale, mm-hmm. it's that it's lost the moisture ratio that it needs.
Because I actually keep my bread in the refrigerator, and I mean, mm-hmm. a loaf of bread tends to last us anywhere from 2 weeks to a month. And mm-hmm. it always tastes good. I never have any problems with it.
Yeah. Bread is wonderful. I can't deny it.
I do have a Middle Eastern meal on my menu for next week, ladies. I ordered my first meal kit ever, meal prep kit. I ordered HelloFresh. I got three meals. They were having an amazing sale for 4th of July. So each kit, I think, comes with two servings, and it ended up costing $33 for three meals to be delivered next week. But there's a Middle Eastern steak and rice pilaf bowl. Might have to come steal some pita from you.
Yeah. Well, sounds great. I can't wait to hear about your experience. This is your first time, right? So we'll get to hear your first take on it.
First time, yeah. And it's just interesting because there's so much diversity that is being offered in terms of, you know, whatever.
The cuisines and everything, right?
Yeah. I feel like, you know, obviously knowing you ladies, I've learned so much more about Middle Eastern cooking over the last few years, but it seems to be gaining popularity in the mainstream, and for good reason, because it's just delicious.
Well, we can't wait to hear, I guess, how it all turns out, and we'll have to get your verdict then.
I'll let you know. HelloFresh.
Well, have a great weekend, ladies, and I look forward to talking with you guys next week. Thank you for listening to Modern Casserole. You can find our show notes at moderncasserole.com with links, photos, and recipes from this week's episode. Subscribe today on our website and everywhere podcasts are available.